Good morning, everybody. The National Broadcasting Company once again brings you a roundup of news from world capitals. For the news of the war as it is handed out in Germany, we take you first to Central Europe. Will you go ahead, Berlin?
Hello, NBC. This is Alex Dreyer in Berlin. German panzers today are reported to be but an hour and a half's motor car distance from the towers of the Kremlin. And this afternoon, the official German Foreign Office spokesman, Dr. Paul Schmidt, asserted that according to information received here, preparations for a Soviet evacuation of Moscow are already well underway. German reports claim that from the Valdai Heights, just south of the Ilmen Lake, to the Sea of Azov, their 800-mile line front is still advancing, splintering the remaining Soviet divisions. One report says that when the advance was begun, the German left wing held back for almost a day, then suddenly struck forward, taking the Russians by surprise. The high command today, referring to the Eastern Front, says that the operations are proceeding according to plan, and adds that the destruction of the Soviets pocketed at Vyazma is nearly completed. The official communique asserts that another Soviet attempt to break through the German rings fastened around Leningrad again collapsed. The Luftwaffe last night is said to have bombed military objectives in Moscow. And while the Luftwaffe last night was also active on the Western Front, bombing Manchester and Hull, the RAF, according to the high command, answered with a large number of bombers, which are said to have flown into northwest, west, and south Germany. Explosive and incendiary bombs were dropped, damaging a number of buildings. 13 of the British raiders are said to have been shot down. There may be better ways of committing murder, but a report from Prague this morning indicates that some Czech elements prefer the Borgian method of rubbing out their enemies. The report says that a number of Czech newspaper editors, friendly to Germany, who had been invited to the home of a former leading Czech personality, suddenly fell ill after dinner. One of the men, Karl Lasnowski, of the paper Czech Slovo, is said to have died from the effects of the poisoned meal. The Prague report says there's no doubt but that Anglophile elements instigated the outrage. A report from Alsace this morning reveals that the Germans are still recruiting men for the armed forces. To the one-time French citizens, an appeal has been made, which says in part, Alsatians, with the consent of the German High Command, you shall now have a chance to take part in the battle for the freedom of Greater Germany as volunteers. The appeal says that Alsatians who served with the French army as privates or non-commissioned officers will, of course, be accepted. Schmidt of the Foreign Office this afternoon also squashed alleged reports in the British press that Germany is trying to conclude a peace with England. Schmidt said that it must be obvious that as far as Germany is concerned, there can be only one decision with the British, a perfectly clear military decision. He added that as long as there was a Churchill or an Eden in the British government, there could never be any talk of peace, and that peace feelers will have to come from the British and not from the Germans. This is Alex Dreyer in Berlin, now returning you to NBC in New York.
Now Charles Lanius reports from Bern in neutral Switzerland. Go ahead, Bern.
Hello, NBC. This is Charles Lanius in Bern. With Briansk in German hands and advanced German units reported within sight of the Russian capital, the great battle on the Middle Eastern front is increasing in violence. This is the impression given in reports coming in from both Berlin and Moscow. Apparently, as the Germans fight their way step by step towards Moscow, the going gets tougher. German reports here this morning admit that the Soviet artillery fire all along the white semicircle, which forms the new red lines about 100 miles from that city, is murderous. And strangely enough, the Germans don't deny that their own losses are heavy. In fact, the story from Berlin tells how in one sector of the middle front, Russian resistance was so fierce that three-quarters of the German troops were lost. It seems that some units of the German armies, probably the speed troops, have succeeded in getting behind the Soviet lines. At least the Berlin message here says that some forward units have left the main German force and can see Moscow from their advanced positions. After 3 days of desperate fighting, the Russians have fallen back from Bryansk. The Soviet midnight communique states their troops evacuated the city, but the resistance is continuing to the east. A supplementary report reveals that there's hardly a house left standing, that the town is almost completely destroyed. Red resistance in the Vyazma area and to the south near Orel is apparently stiffening to some extent. This is indicated by the lack of German claims of rapid progress during the past 36 hours and Russian reports that their troops are yielding ground only foot by foot. However, the Russians state that the situation in the Orel region is extremely critical due to the considerable numerical superiority of the German armored divisions there. Red troops surrounding the Vyazma area are reported to have made repeated efforts to break out of the German armored ring so that they can rejoin the bulk of Timoshenko's army in the vicinity of Moyak, west of Moscow. But so far, these attempts have been unsuccessful. The Germans say that at a number of points where the attacks were the strongest, the battlefield is covered with the bodies of thousands of Red soldiers. On the other hand, the Soviets assert that yesterday's fighting was expensive for the Germans, too. It says that the German casualties for the day rose to 12,000 men, dead and wounded. As the invaders slowly approach Moscow, dispatches from that capital reveal that a stubborn defense is being prepared. Stories from there tell how the city is assuming the aspect of an armed camp. Divisions of fresh troops marching through the city, detachments of artillery of every kind, armored units and supply trucks, all rolling toward the fighting to the west. Although the people know the situation is grave, there's no sign of panic. According to messages here this morning, the Russians spent a calm and normal Sunday going to the theaters and cinemas in their casual Russian way, just as though they didn't realize that Germans were only 100 miles away. The war came to peaceful Switzerland last night in the shape of bombs dropped by planes of an unknown nationality. The Swiss Army Command announced today that about 10:30 last night, foreign planes flew over northern Switzerland and let go bombs on the village of Bouville, situated almost on the German frontier. A house was destroyed and 3 persons were killed. An investigation is in progress. Last night, the British were bombing in southern Germany and Bavaria. This is Charles Lanius in Bern. I now return you to NBC in New York.
Next, a report from the British capital. Will you go ahead, London?
This is John McVeigh in London. Last night, the Royal Air Force Bomber Command made one of the heaviest attacks of the war. More than 300 bombers went to Germany to bomb Nuremberg and Bremen and other places in western and northwestern Germany. 11 British bombers are missing. German air activity over Britain last night was not on a large scale. Bombs were dropped at scattered points in the northwest where casualties and damage were caused. One raider was brought down. Authoritative quarters in London this morning said that the German drive in the central sector of the Russian front appears to have been slowed up and that there are increasing indications that Russian reserves are reaching the front. Dispatches reaching London from the French frontier say that the Germans are using their successes in Russia as a lever to force Vichy to sign a peace treaty. So far, it's said, the section of the Vichy cabinet that believes in a wait-and-see policy has managed to keep up opposition to the move. The people of Vichy France are said to have largely recovered from the shock of the defeat and now believe the signing of the armistice was a mistake. The Vichy government, to counter this lack of support, is reported to be making efforts to control all youth organizations directly. The aged Marshal Pétain makes frequent tours through the provinces to whip up popularity for his government. According to the London Times, the Vichy authorities carefully stage enthusiastic receptions for the Marshal at points where he's due to appear in public. At these points, the free sale of wine, tobacco, and cigarettes is allowed for 3 days, while all known opponents of Vichy are confined to their houses for the same length of time. People visiting London from the British provinces these days are usually amazed at the life and gaiety of the capital. A young British officer who hadn't seen London for about a year said to me that he hadn't dreamed there were so many people in London. We tried 4 different restaurants before we could get a table at tea time. For the past few weeks, you've had to book in advance to get rooms in the big hotels. Nightclubs and movies are usually full. It's hard to tell whether this is a healthy or an unhealthy sign. Many people are using the bomb-free nights to go to the shows and restaurants they couldn't go to last winter. People who were evacuated to the country when the raids began have come back to be with husbands and relatives who had to stay in London. Weekends, a lot of younger officers try to get to London for a few hours to break the monotony of life in some lonely army post. But the probability is that one good hard raid would send many of the hotel dwellers back to the country. If America were to come into the shooting war, the Army Air Force would probably be able to use the experience of at least a few experienced American fighter pilots. There's little doubt that some of the American Eagle pilots would resign their commissions to join the American Air Force. This fact is more important than you'd think at first. If America were to go to war, the Army Air Force would have no pilots of fighting age with actual war experience. And the gap between being a good peacetime pilot and a good pilot in an air combat is a huge one. The Army has sent over plenty of pilots who try out planes over Britain and spend their time at airfields talking with the British fighting men. But none of them is piloting a Spitfire over France or a bomber over Germany. And that's the only way a flyer can get the experience that really counts in wartime. One of the Eagle pilots explained the other day why the Americans and the RAF follow British leaders. He said, "Many of us have been flying for years. Some of us were trained in the U.S. Army Air Corps. But these Britishers have had bags of fighting experience. We know they know what they're doing, and we'd follow them anywhere." This is John McVane in London, returning you to the National Broadcasting Company in New York.
And that's the latest news on the war. Now Earl Godwin comments on developments at home, speaking from the newsroom in Washington.
You know, you never can tell who's listening to you until you begin to make a mistake. I was broadcasting on a program which you don't hear on this network a little while ago, and I was reporting the Falls River rubber factory fire, and the news that I had was 125,000 tons of crude rubber, and one of my distinguished listeners, a member of my local radio family, called up and gave me the dope and called me down for making such a mistake. It was Jesse Jones, RFC, or federal loan head, who has probably supplied all that crude rubber to Falls River and other places. He says, and it might be interesting to everybody to know, that it was not 125,000 tons, not 30,000 tons, but between 15 and 18,000 tons of rubber, which burned up. And I wonder what burning 15,000 tons of burning rubber would smell like. It must smell like all the brakes in New England had been left on all night. Well, closer to home, possibly, than this, is the question that's going to be asked in Congress. The chaos and confusion reported to an inquiring committee of Congress, which wants to know just who's getting the defense contracts and do the big corporations get all the gravy, and if so, why? Now, there opens this morning an unpublicized hearing, no advance ballyhoo, but a section of the military affairs of the House, headed by Representative Faddis of Pennsylvania, will start inquiring into the business of defense. Already that committee has had a few scouts out in the industrial sections and are ready to make use of the report so far. They're said to be indicative of confusion and chaos and misgiving, at least in New England, from which I've had some reports from the same sources as those on which the committee will depend to start today's inquiry. The government has established a policy and is endeavoring to maintain the policy of utilizing the small industrial plants, but it does not work 100%, and there's a growing demand in Congress to stop the current trend ere it results in the death to the small plants, thousands of which are the life and meal ticket to as many towns and smaller cities. And so today the Military Affairs Committee starts inquiring. Another hearing from which much more importance than news will flow is the executive session of the Foreign Affairs Committee, which intends to hear Secretaries Hull, Knox, and Admiral Stark and Land preliminary to introducing the legislation for arming American ships. A few Republicans are going to object to everything, but if the trends in Congress indicate national political occurrence, the Republican attitude here seems to be growing into an aggressive attack on the administration's lack of speed in arming. This is Monday morning gossip, I know. May turn out to be wrong, but aside from individual members of the Senate and the House who are strongly opposed to the administration's program, the GOP, as I see it here, not where you are, has this attitude: my country, right or wrong, but my country, and why doesn't somebody take the handcuffs off of Uncle Sam and the lead out of his shoes and let the old gentleman speed up? And that's all from Washington at this time.
And that's the news up to this moment. We've heard from Alex Dreyer in Berlin, Charles Lanius in Bern, Switzerland, John McVane in London, and Earl Godwin in Washington. This is the National Broadcasting Company.